No author at the time took thought for us and said, here's what we're doing, here's why we're doing it, here are the principles upon which we're operating. We have to look back and extrapolate from what we know to what they were thinking. Now, another important thing that began happening in the second century is this. A group of writers whom we call the Christian apologists began to explain the new faith to the ancient world. So a first point that I've made then is that over the course of the second century, and maintaining certainly some faith with the teachings of Paul himself and perhaps of the gospel writers, an administrative organization began to arise. That's one element of the movement. But a second element of the movement is a clear definition of, a clear delineation of, the ideas, the doctrines, the teachings of that movement. Now you may say, but don't they already have that? Don't they have that in the Gospels? Don't they have that in the Epistles? Well, the answer to that question is yes, but they have it, for example, in something like 20 Gospels. Of which only 4 became canonical, became official. In a later lecture, we'll talk about that process of canon making. We have lots of other letters. We have other treatises. We have other writings. And I've also mentioned, which I should say did not become canonical, and I mentioned already that Paul, when he was writing to various communities, I think I instanced Corinth, saw controversy. So one of the things that began to happen in the second century in what we call the post-apostolic age, or what we may also think of as the post-biblical age, is that a group of Christian writers, whom we call the apologists, began explaining their new faith to the ancient world. No longer claiming that they were writing, as it were, the Word of God, God's revelation, that to be found in the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures, and the New Testament, the Christian Scriptures, but now, in a sense, commentary, explanation. Okay? Now, quick word on apology. When we call these second century writers the apologists, we must make very clear that these are not people who are going around saying, oops, excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm a Christian. Apology, in its Greek sense, is a careful, principled defense of a position. So an apology is a defense of a position. It's not, whoops, I'm sorry. That's apology in a very different and much later sense. Okay. The first of the apologists to whom we might devote a moment's attention was Justin Martyr. Now, he lived from about 100 AD to about 165, and he wrote a book called A Dialogue with Trypho the Jew. Now, what's interesting about this book is it appears that among large numbers of people who were not particularly well disposed towards Christianity, there was a growing sense that Christians were really just a renegade sect of Jews. There was also a growing sense among at least some people that Christians were somehow inevitably hostile to the Roman Empire. So, Justin Martyr writes his dialogue with Trypho the Jew to differentiate between Christianity and Judaism, to say these are two separate things, they are two different things, and then also to tell the emperor Antoninus Pius, one of the 5 good emperors about whom we spoke in an earlier lecture, to tell Antoninus Pius that Christians were good and loyal subjects of the empire, that they were no concern to him, he needn't bother himself about them. Now, Bishop Ignatius of Antioch, we met him with his phrase monarchical bishops a moment ago, born about 35, died in 107, began writing a whole series of letters to other Christian communities, affirming basic Christian doctrines and warning against false teachers. Now, what's very interesting and revealing about Ignatius's writings is that there's a growing sense that there's an authorized way to understand what Christians believe and that there's some sort of bad guys out there who have ideas all their own or who have ideas that are a little bit kooky and who should not be paid attention to. So we can see then across the course of the second century, not only a growing administrative organization, but we can see a very clear sense that Christianity was a distinct faith. It was not a version of something else. It had teachings that were regarded by some, though not by all, perhaps, as authentic and binding. Now, let's put all of this into slightly different terms and say, what kinds of factors can we, as historians, point to in accounting for the success and the spread of Christianity? Well, we must acknowledge in the first place that most of those who converted were not articulate. That is to say, they were not literate people. They didn't write books. They didn't leave documents. But those who were quite regularly stressed the compelling nature of Christianity's basic teachings. So before we turn to political or social or economic or other kinds of arguments, we must acknowledge what a great many writers in antiquity themselves acknowledged. Christianity won people to itself because of its fundamental teachings.